Today is Monday, March 22nd, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junior Duofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, surge of migrants at the southern U.S. border puts the Biden administration under pressure.
The message is quite clear. Do not come. The border is closed. The border is secure.
Also, healthcare workers join Myanmar anti-coup protests.
Marchers also held placards calling for the international community to uphold its responsibility to protect doctrine.
Plus, today is World Water Day. These stories and more are next. With a surge of migrants at the southern U.S. border, the Biden administration is under pressure to quickly create policies and procedures to address the situation, particularly when it comes to children. Michelle Quinn reports.
The message is quite clear. Do not come. The border is closed. The border is secure.
That's the message from the Biden administration, as the number of migrants to the U.S. southern border is on pace to be the biggest in 20 years, according to the administration. Citing the pandemic, the administration says now is not the time for people to make the trip. Single adults, who make up the majority of people at the border, are being expelled, as are families. Children traveling alone are not. Thousands of unaccompanied children are in custody at the border, according to reports. The Biden administration is scrambling to find appropriate housing for them and says it has to rebuild the system for processing migrants that the Trump administration dismantled. Alejandro Mayorkas is the Secretary of Homeland Security who spoke on ABC this week.
We are rebuilding the system as we address the needs of vulnerable children who arrive at our borders.
Some Republican lawmakers say that it is Biden who has created the situation, with mixed messages and the ending of Trump's so-called Remain in Mexico policy, requiring asylum seekers to wait there for their court proceedings. Trump's policy created a disincentive for people in Honduras, Guatemala, and other countries to make the trip, they say. Congressman Michael McCaul is a Republican from Texas. He spoke to ABC this week.
It's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse. Springtime, summer, more and more come over. The message is coming back that, hey, we got a new president. Come on in. We're open for business to the traffickers. And I predict a million people trying to get into this country by the summertime.
Children are only supposed to stay in custody for 72 hours before moving to a shelter designed to house minors. The administration opened three new facilities last week, but declined to give a timeline for more facilities capable of handling the surge. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
After a testy two-day meeting of top diplomats, China says it has agreed with the U.S. to take up climate change and a handful of other issues. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The meeting in Anchorage, Alaska, was marked by acrimonious public exchanges. But Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the two sides did manage to tackle an expansive agenda.
Iran, on North Korea, on Afghanistan, on climate. Our interests intersect.
The official Xinhua news agency says China and the U.S. have decided to set up a working group on climate change and hold talks on consular missions and issues related to each nation's journalists. However, U.S. officials say no formal agreements have been reached on resuming any dialogues or starting new initiatives. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Healthcare workers have marched through Myanmar's second biggest city, kicking off another day of countrywide protests against last month's coup. Elsewhere, police have used violence against protesters and security forces have shot dead at least one person. About 100 doctors, nurses, and medical students and pharmacists in their long white coats lined up Sunday morning on a main road in Mandalay to chant slogans and voice opposition to the February 1st coup that toppled the elected civilian government of Aung San Suu Kyi. AP correspondent Sarah Bassett reports the march transited suburban areas, shunning main roads to avoid confrontation with security forces.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Repeated lethal attacks by police and the army has seen a fall in numbers on the streets. At the head of the group, about 300 strong, marchers held a banner that read, "We're all scared, but we can't stop protesting." Marchers also held placards calling for the international community to uphold its responsibility to protect doctrine as state violence against protesters continues. The death toll in Myanmar has climbed in recent weeks in the face of lethal force by police and soldiers shooting into crowds. I'm Sarah Bassett.
Mass protests and gang violence have roiled Haiti for months, and many blame the president for not doing enough to stop it. As Sandra Lemaire reports, ongoing kidnapping and jailbreaks are threatening to derail elections planned for summer.
As violence spirals out of control in Haiti, the government is under intense pressure by the United States and the international community to organize elections. But the growing unrest is threatening to derail the process.
Haiti's a mess. The people are suffering. This has to stop. There's got to be some order.
This photo purports to show members of a Port-au-Prince gang after a failed anti-gang operation that left four police officers dead on March 12th. VOA cannot confirm the authenticity of the photo published by VOA Creole affiliate Impulse Web Media. The deadly raid took place in Village de Dieu, a Port-au-Prince slum controlled by gangs. Gang members posted gruesome images on social media of bodies left behind, infuriating Haitians and grieving families.
As for the bodies still in gang territory, police will do whatever it takes to recover them.
President Jovenel Moïse declared a state of emergency on March 17 after a group of disgruntled police officers known as Phantom 509 staged a jailbreak to free colleagues they say were unjustly detained.
We've been suffering a long time. We have decided to take control of our destiny. It means we have the freedom to make a choice. It's today or never. Today or never.
We are in the streets in solidarity with the police and for the release of the police detained by those in power.
The rebel police officers staged a second jailbreak March 18th. They accused the police chief of corruption and are warning of more violence if their demands are not met.
Until we get the policemen's bodies back, we will make the country unlivable. The country will not be able to function.
Government officials say there's a new directive to empower police.
I understand security is a major issue. I think there's an executive order that has been issued yesterday in order to give more power to the head of the police structure, so they could better address the gangs issues that is terrorizing the country.
For now, Haitians are struggling to stay safe.
It's a headache. The situation is tough. This insecurity is killing us. When we go out, we rush and look to see what's ahead of and what's behind us.
Elections in Haiti are scheduled for June. Sandra Lemaire, VOA News, Washington.
Ahead of World Water Day Monday, the World Meteorological Organization warns climate change is intensifying water-related disasters, threatening the lives and livelihoods of billions of people. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Text in 321. Climate-related hazards include increased flooding and longer-lasting droughts. Climate change also is altering rainfall patterns, affecting water availability and worsening the damage floods and drought cause worldwide. The World Meteorological Organization says increased flooding threatens to destroy water points and sanitation facilities and contaminate water sources. As a consequence, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says billions of people have limited or no access to clean water and sanitation.
So 39% of the global population doesn't have access to safe drinking water. We expect this problem to be exacerbated because of socioeconomic changes, of population growth, and obviously changes in sources of water, such as glaciers.
The WMO calls glaciers the water towers of the world. It warns the melting of ice cover and glaciers is leading to more hazards and threatening the long-term water security of hundreds of millions of people. Nulla says one of the most dramatic examples of how this is playing out can be seen in Tajikistan, a country that had more than 14,500 glaciers in the 20th century.
Today, more than 1,000 of these have completely melted, and the total volume of glacier mass has decreased by one third. This, in the short term, leads to more hazards like avalanches, mud flows, flooding, what we call glacial outbursts.
Glaciers are a key source of water. In the long term, Nullis warns, glaciers are a key source of water. In the long term, Nullis warns glacier melt will lead to increased water stress for many millions of people. She says the same phenomenon is being repeated throughout the world. The WMO says more than half of countries worldwide have no quality management systems for water. The agency is calling for more concerted action on safeguarding the world's diminishing water sources and on mitigating climate change. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Arizona-based charity Pinnacle House is in Nigeria on a mission to aid the poor, widows, and orphans displaced by Islamic militants' attack and growing economic difficulties. It provides medical aid and funds to groups, individuals, and scholarships to indigent youths. For more, I reached Edith Izuebunam, founder of the group, about the outcome of the Nigerian visit.
Well, so far, so great. We've been able to touch lights in Anambra State, Nobi, and also Abuja, a community called Kwali, and we'll be going to Abeokuta Wednesday.
Part of your mission, we were told, especially in Abuja, were not just widows and poor people, but some who escaped from all the attacks up north. So what exactly, what kind of services are you providing for these people?
Medical services, financial aid, and moral support.
Your organization also carries out missions in Mexico and also in Brazil. How did this all start?
Actually, it started in Mexico. We adopted an orphanage in Sonoran, and then we decided, okay, we were inspired to reach the widows in Nigeria. And in Brazil, it was not just the widows, but like Bahia, the parts that need not just medical, but also outreach. So we kind of also speak the gospel to them. That's what we do too. So more like win souls while giving them medical aid, financial aid.
Why did you decide Nigeria in Africa?
Because charity begins at home. I'm also Nigerian. My parents are Nigerian, so which automatically should make me a Nigerian.
Are you able to estimate the number of people you've assisted so far? And for how long have you been carrying out this mission?
It's been over 10 years. And estimate, I can't give an estimate because like in a gathering, for example, we have over 500 people to 1,000 that shows up. So I can't really say, but I don't keep a tab on the people, the lives that I've touched, but it's a lot.
What are the peculiar challenges you face when you go to almost a strange country, going out, meeting the people and offering assistance?
I would say language. So that's why we always have, before we go to a place, we need a go-to. And even in the city that I identify with in Nigeria, I've only been able to do it twice there. That's in Cross River State, Calabar. Just because the person who kind of helped to create the awareness wants me to give the money to them to do it. But I like to be a part of it. I like to be involved in it. That happens also with Jos, the IDP camp in Jos. So when they want it, the way I cannot direct it and I don't know where the funds are going, I don't like being a part of it because I like to be involved, physically involved.
How worried are you that you are doing this mission when the COVID-19 pandemic is ravaging Nigeria?
I'm not worried, I would say, because this is actually when people really need it. We couldn't go to Mexico, Brazil, or Nigeria in 2020. And we thought about it, and this year is like, COVID is not going to stop us. We're going to stay safe, follow the guidelines, and still touch life.
From what you've seen in Nigeria so far, did anything stand out to you? Were there special moments in all these cities where you've visited so far?
People are hungry. People are hungry.
That's Edith Izuebunam, founder of Arizona-based Pinnacle House, speaking with me from Calabar. This is the Voice of America. Eight activists detained at sea as they sought to flee Hong Kong by speedboat have finished serving jail sentences in China. They were handed over Monday to authorities in Hong Kong, where they may face further prosecution. The group will return to Hong Kong in batches. The eight are part of a larger group of 12 Hong Kong pro-democracy activists and protesters detained at sea last year during an ill-fated attempt to reach self-ruled Taiwan. Syrian opposition activists and paramedic groups say airstrikes on several locations in northwest Syria near the border with Turkey have killed at least one person and set several trucks used to distribute aid on fire. The late Sunday attacks angered Turkey, which had asked Russia to secure an immediate end to such strikes. The protests in the West England city of Bristol against new policing legislation descended into violent clashes that left at least 20 police officers injured, too seriously. Britain's Interior Minister has condemned the protests, which started Sunday afternoon and ran through early hours of Monday. She branded the scenes, which also saw several police vehicles damaged, as, quote, unacceptable, unquote. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Widespread flooding is disrupting the rollout of COVID-19 vaccinations in Australia as thousands of people are forced to leave their homes. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Emergency crews in eastern Australia have responded to thousands of calls for help. The rain in many areas has been unrelenting. For the first time in years, Sydney's main reservoir is overflowing, putting suburbs at risk of flooding. Authorities are reporting once-in-a-century downpours north of Sydney, and thousands of people have been told to leave their homes. Near the town of Taree, a house occupied by a young couple was washed away down a river by floodwaters on what was supposed to have been their wedding day. The bride, Sarah Saws, told Australian television the property was swept away within minutes.
I'm lost for words. I don't even know what to say. Like, everything that we own, everything that we work hard for, gone within 10 minutes, and it was out of our sight.
Campaign group Greenpeace has linked the severe storms in eastern Australia to climate change and the burning of coal, oil and gas. The wild weather is disrupting Australia's mass coronavirus inoculation program. More than 6 million Australians are now eligible for an injection in the next phase of the vaccination rollout. Australia's medical regulator has approved domestic production of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says the drug is safe.
This is a fundamental decision which locks in for Australia access to 50 million units of domestically produced vaccines. It means that the manufacturing process has been approved, it's safe, effective, meets all of the requirements from one of the toughest regulators in the world.
Vaccines made by AstraZeneca and Pfizer are approved for use in Australia. One of Australia's most senior medical officials, Federal Health Department Secretary Brendan Murphy, has said international travel into and out of Australia would be severely restricted for the rest of the year until global COVID-19 vaccinations are more widely administered. Australia closed its international borders a year ago to foreign travellers because of the pandemic. Murphy said life in Australia would get back to normal, but it would take time and patience was needed. Australia has recorded 29,196 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Greece, prided itself on successfully quashing its coronavirus curve like few countries worldwide, now is struggling with a roaring resurgence of the bug that causes the COVID-19 disease. As infections continue to surge, the government in Athens is preparing to draft doctors from the private sector to aid the state's strained health system and exhausted hospital staff. Anthi Karasava reports from Athens.
Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis says Greece is fighting a last battle in its war against the pandemic. But the voluntary assistance it has requested from doctors across the nation in recent days has not come through. And that has the Conservative leader here saying he will not think twice about drafting medical personnel from the private sector to reinforce the healthcare system in the public sector. The Prime Minister's warning comes as Greece grapples with a surge in coronavirus infections, a startling spike that has seen cases grow from around 3,000 in September to nearly 240,000 this past week. Sofia Puriki, a doctor at the State Sotiria Hospital, describes the severity of the situation. This last wave, she says, is just terrible. She says too many patients are being admitted to hospitals, and that is overwhelming the healthcare system, with intensive care wards running out of beds to treat people. Hospital doctors and staff, says Puriki, are exhausted. Of about 200 doctors requested by the government to assist their colleagues in the public sector, just 50 have come forward. Worse yet, attempts over the weekend to woo them with bonus fees failed. Doctors' associations across the country say the government should first recruit residents at state hospitals and other medical staff waiting to be hired before proceeding with the order, which they describe as absolutely extreme. Athanasios Exarchopoulos, president of the country's Doctors Federation, warns against it. Ultimatums of this sort, he says, can only prove counterproductive. Much of Greece has been in lockdown since November, fueling frustration, riots, and deepening financial woes in a country still crawling out of a decade-long recession. And while the draconian measures have not helped the government effectively manage the health crisis, it is now opting for a different approach, allowing shops and businesses to operate anew in a desperate bid to at least salvage the failing state of the economy. The government says it will also start distributing free self-test kits in the coming weeks to alleviate pressure on the healthcare system. Experts say the move may pave the way for a new way of self-care against the pandemic within the European Union. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
Israelis vote Tuesday in their fourth parliamentary election in just 2 years. Once again, the race boils down to a referendum on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu, who has served as Prime Minister for 12 years, hopes voters will reward him for leading the country's successful coronavirus vaccine rollout and his diplomatic outreach to the Arab world. But thousands of Israelis demonstrated outside his residence on Saturday, calling for an end to his leadership. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
Protesters filed through streets closed to traffic, waving flags, banging drums, and blowing horns. They shouted chants to replace the 71-year-old conservative just 3 days before the country's fourth election in 2 years.
This is our last chance before the election. We want everyone to come and vote to change, vote to exchange this government. 3 days from now, there will be the election, and we would like to see a change.
Israeli media reported the crowd was nearly 20,000 people, one of the largest anti-Netanyahu protests this year. Netanyahu faces mounting pressure in the run-up to the March 23rd election. He is on trial for corruption and faces charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Netanyahu has repeatedly dismissed the charges as politically motivated. His right-wing Likud party is expected to win the largest number of seats in parliament, but opinion polls predict no clear majority, similar to the previous three elections. Netanyahu hopes his rapid vaccination rollout program, along with the series of normalization agreements with Arab countries, will give him a boost needed to secure the majority in parliament and win him a sixth term in office.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.